Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're in the public eye, no matter how big or small your role is in the public eye, people can come for you.
Movember presents In the Barber Chair, a podcast dedicated to bringing you real cuts and real conversations about men's health. I'm Matt Johnson and I'm your host. Movember wants men to take action to live happier, healthier, longer lives, and they invest in prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health and suicide prevention.
Welcome to the show, Jake Humphreys. Welcome to the In the Barber Chair podcast. But you're not in a barber chair, you're in your own home there. But welcome nevertheless.
Thank you. I'm in my study at home. Out here in East Anglia. Nice to see you, mate.
How is things going during these wild times? Has lockdown been okay for you?
I feel so lucky. We've got two kids and we moved out of London to Norfolk back in 2016. So it's kind of, we have sort of felt like we're on the outside looking in at everything going on. I mean, my sister and my brother-in-law both work for the NHS. So she has been responsible for kind of helping be part. We live in Norwich. So she's been part of the plan for East Anglia for how they were going to deal with everything. And then my brother-in-law is a physio, but got retrained to operate ventilators and work on the sort of front line. So it was a weird time for us because our kids were off school. I was not going to work. My wife doesn't work anyway. So we were in the garden in the sunshine and the weather was amazing, playing with the children. And also, I think what was really good for us was we were desperate to keep it like as normal as possible for them. There's no point us talking about coronavirus and death rates and, you know, vaccines in front of a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. So we just basically were like, right, between 6:30 when they normally wake up and 7 p.m, we just don't talk about it. They know it's going on, but we don't want to sort of fill their brains with it. So we just said, let's just enjoy being all together because they're not seeing their friends. They're not at school. It was weird enough anyway. But so then it was a weird mix of having a normal day and then in the evening calling my sister. And this was right at the sort of beginning when she was fearful that it was just going to kind of devastate every part of the country and that we were going to, you know, be part of that devastation in East Anglia. Mm. And she was really, like you could see, you know, we might get on to talking about mental health a bit later on, but I think that's something that's kind of not been talked about enough is the mental health impacts on the NHS workers and the key workers who've had to kind of just go through this. No one gets a job as a nurse and thinks they're going to deal with a global pandemic, you know? Mm. So that it was a strange time, but we've been okay. You know, we're super lucky to be out in the countryside, basically.
Yeah, I think one of the major factors, definitely for me, was that fear, the unknown. More and more I talked to people and I did a few like Instagram lives to try and check in with people to see what they were thinking. And that fear of the unknown was absolutely palpable. And I think it's still there. And yeah, you're absolutely right. My brother is a police officer back in Wales. And just being in that situation and not having any answers and just taking it day by day with that fear, it's taken its toll massively. It must have. How is your sister now?
Yeah, she's okay now. I mean, she's just still, it's weird because I don't think that anxiety goes away. Like until they say, right, here's a vaccine, coronavirus is no longer with us. That anxiety for those frontline workers is like there all the time. They just don't know when there's going to be another sort of spike big enough to change everything again. But she seems okay, actually. It's weird anyway. I think when you've got kids, you just become so much more aware of mortality. Like I personally, until in my 30s, I felt invincible and you just barrel on through. You never go to the doctor. Nothing is going to happen to me. I'm all right. Do you know what I mean?
Like
classic way you think. And then you have kids and then you get this added complication of please don't let anything bad happen to me in case my children get it. And that was the sort of, that was really all I was worried about was just because then all these reports, the biggest fear for me was these reports that started coming out about children showing symptoms and this worrying rise in children being admitted to hospital. And you just, you know, they talk about mutations and all this. And then you're thinking, oh, no, just not the kids. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely found this in my probably, I had that mortality check in my early 20s. I shattered my cheekbone and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm not invincible anymore. I'm not a Batman or I thought I was.
Yeah.
And definitely in my 30s, I'm just a bit more cautious about things. Since having kids, have you put the brakes on just how you socialize, how you go out, what you do with your free time sports-wise? Is that something yet that's kind of subconsciously or consciously happened to you?
Yeah, I do wish that I had, like I work out a lot now and I didn't do it when I was younger and I kind of wish I had, but I think it's probably without really thinking about it, subconsciously it is this feeling that like I'm now 42. I don't want to work out the number of days that I've got left, but I do know no matter how long it is, it's not as long as I want it to be.
Mm.
And I know if I said this to my kids, they'll just roll their eyes and think dad's being boring. But to get to 42 has gone in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
So to get to 84, double this, it's either going to be the same or it's going to be even quicker, right? Because it feels like it's speeding up all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you've seen the musical Hamilton, but there's a line in that musical where he sings, there's a million things I haven't done.
Yeah.
And I'm really aware of all the things I haven't done. And I think in terms of the mortality thing, it's less like fearing death and more just being aware of how lucky we are to be healthy. I saw a quote the other day saying that health is the crown that healthy people wear that only the ill people see. So in other words, only when you're ill do you look at a healthy person and you see them there wearing a lovely crown. But when you're the healthy person, you don't feel like you're wearing it because you take your health for granted.
I completely understand that, you
don't want to be the wealthiest person in the graveyard. You know that famous old phrase that my granny always used to say to me, which is basically, I guess, you know, you work all your life to build up your cash reserves and you would give it all away towards the end for one extra day, wouldn't you?
Does that affect like bucket lists for you? Have you got like things, because you're a successful human being, is there any, what else is on your list of things to do professionally and personally?
I think an interesting change for me, Matt, was that when I first moved on from kids' TV, because I didn't really earn much money on children's television and I just lived in a rented flat in London. Then I landed my job in Formula One and I was around all of these like high achieving billionaires and millionaires and Formula One drivers and business leaders and CEOs. And we were flying to Monaco and Singapore. And it was almost like this kid from a little village in Norwich had been allowed to look through this curtain into like this crazy world of madness. And then I was like, right. And if you'd have said to me at 28 when I got that job, write down the list of all the things you want to achieve, I definitely would have written down super yacht, Ferrari, 458 Italia, private island, helicopter,
two helicopters
for two islands, and then have whichever island I want to fly to at any given
just
day.
One, just in case you want like a Mackie D's,
exactly,
back and forth.
Why not? Yeah. I'd be so rich, so I would just send the pilot to go and collect the McDonald's.
I'd have one on my island.
I'd fire him. If he flew it back and it was cold, he'd be fired.
Absolutely, or shot.
That's how
I mean, you're so rich, you can shoot people.
So if you'd have asked me, you know, we're going back like 15 years, I know that's how I would have listed the like achievements and stuff. Now that I'm 42, it is only about experiences.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about like spending millions of pounds to go on amazing holidays, because that basically then becomes the same thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It is just about not being so obsessed with what's happening tomorrow, not worrying so much about what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Trying to be as present as possible with my kids so that when they come home and Florence wants to, you know, run around the garden and go searching for worms, I am totally in that moment with her. And we do stuff all the time. So if it's a nice day when we collect the kids from school, we will get in the car and we will just drive to the beach and we will just blow up a paddleboard and go out on the water. I mean, a few weeks ago, I got up about 6 o'clock in the morning and I made scrambled egg and bacon and put them in flasks, like thermos flasks, like you had when you were a kid, so it stayed hot.
Yeah.
And we just woke the kids up, drove them to the beach and ate breakfast on the beach before everyone got there. That sort of stuff now, to me, is worth more than any
priceless
plane or anything. It's absolutely priceless. Yeah.
And there's another thing.
The only disappointing thing is we do these things and then we say to our kids 2 months later, hey, what about that day on the beach? And they're like, no, I don't remember that. You're like, what? You don't remember the effort your dad went to?
It meant so much to me.
Yeah.
You never know. They might be on a podcast in 30 years' time going, I remember that bacon and egg morning. And it was one of the greatest mornings of my life. That's when I realized what really mattered.
That. Well, do you know what? If they are on a podcast in that many years' time, all I would want them to say is that my dad was present, my dad was around. And not just there, actually there, you know?
What made you realize that being present was important? Because I think that's super fascinating. What happened to you to realize?
It's a really good question. I think part of it is natural evolution as you get older. And I don't know, how old are you, Matt?
37.
So you're a few years younger than me. I don't know whether you've found this yet, but there are quite a few of our friends are suddenly having a shit time. Mm-hmm. Like either relationship breakdowns or serious job problems. Or I think particularly with men, there seems to be like an expectation of where you have to be in your life by the time you get to the big 4-0. And a few of my friends that are not there are really, I think, struggling with it. And I think that when you start to see all that stuff, and some of these people, by the way, are really successful. And some of them, we'd all know them on the television, on the radio. You know, they're like higher, in the eyes of other people, they're high achieving.
Successful.
You would look at them and go, wow, I'd love to be that person.
Mm.
But their turmoil is that they're either too invested in the things that they don't care about, or they perhaps don't even yet realize that they're constantly validating themselves by buying stuff. And I think it's such a dangerous game to get into where thinking that by buying a lovely car, it sort of moves you further forwards. And I think I was probably guilty of wanting to do that when I was a few years ago and then realizing how stressful it felt. And I guess partly my upbringing as well. We didn't have a lot of money. My dad was a charity worker. My mum was a teacher, but they were always present. Like we were a proper family unit. And the final part of this is my wife's values, really. Like Harriet, who I met in a nightclub in Norwich in 1999.
Is
really...
Was it called Zeus or something?
No, it was called Liquid.
Oh, we had a liquid in Cardiff. Yeah, or was it
everyone had a liquid.
Yeah.
It was part of the liquid show. And there was like lava lamps all around there.
Oh,
and it was I think it was a DJ Luck and MC Neat like performance night. The actual DJ Luck.
2001, 2000?
99.
That's the word.
So this was just as they were on the cusp of their success.
Yeah.
And, she's amazing, Harriet, because she got a job in PR, but she didn't like it. She felt judged all the time. So, and weirdly, you know, obviously you work in television. You know, the one job I could never do is production manager, looking after money that's not mine and having to say no all the time to people's requests.
Yeah.
She said to me, I'd love to do that job. And I said, well, then go for it. So she gave up her job in PR. She got a job on Big Brother. And then she worked on Dancing on Ice and I'm a Celeb and Strictly Come Dancing, but stopped all of it to come back and be with the kids, because she is also of the mind that you will never get these early years back with our children. And it's far, you know, as exciting as it is to be standing in the wings of Strictly Come Dancing when you go on air on a Saturday night at 7:30, being able to put your kids to bed every night for her. And I'm not saying this is, you know, I'm not judging anyone else here. For her and for me, that is the single most important thing, because those days you never get back.
I think that's very, very important. And what you just said then, it's what's right for you and your values.
Yeah.
For so long, I've fallen victim to it, and I still fall victim to seeking things that I feel like that would impress other people, or that I think that I need. And I did it for such a long time with like watches and cars and careers and even girlfriends, you know, all that type of stuff. And for me, the humbling life experience was my own issues with my own mental health, with depression 10 years ago. And, and then the quest for whatever that was over the last 10 years.
I hear it completely.
And it's that every single dead end that I've gone down and every single mistake that I've made has all been a lesson. It's all been a failure, nearly being bankrupt 4 years ago because of silly decisions to rent a really expensive place in Chiswick when I didn't need to, and a nice car. All of those things. Humbling experiences has taught me, every single lesson has taught me to be more present and to actually seek out what's right for you and not for this expectation of you or this version of yourself. And it's, for me, the greatest lesson, I think, for every human being, you know, for whatever reason. If you can get to that point where you just realize the present moment is paradise, that's it. Yeah. You know, the end goal, the whatever that is, the result of hard work is something incredibly wonderful to have and to achieve. But the doing and the presence of that is, for me, the most beautiful part of it all. And I think...
Totally. And I think that I think I found the answer, right? And for me, anyway, the answer is that sort of true, like, leadership or truly knowing that you're happy is that you're so comfortable and so confident in your own skin that every decision you make is about lifting other people up rather than shouting about yourself all the time. And I think that... And it was Harriet that said this to me a few weeks ago. She's like, I've just looked at everything you do. And like, all of it is about trying to like make other people look and feel good. So I have this production company called Whisper. And we are so intense about helping people who are underrepresented in the media industry get an opportunity. So whether that is because they're from a disadvantaged background or they're black or they're Asian or they're disabled, or they're a member of the LGBTQ plus, or they're just simply a woman. Like, it's amazing how often you don't see those people underrepresented. So the whole point of Whisper, as well as producing good content, is to really genuinely attack equality in a really aggressive way. So we just produced a documentary called The Talk for Channel 4, which was the first time ever a documentary had been part funded by the production company. And it was about the talk that black people have to have with their kids, which you and I will never have to have with our kids, which is life's going to be harder purely because the color of your skin. And I have a scholarship at the UEA, so I fund a student to go through the university to do a media degree, again, from a disadvantaged background. And then I invested in an eyewear brand called Coral Eyewear, which takes... fishnets out of the sea and plastic out of landfill and turns it into eyewear. But again, it's run by a 19-year-old student who sort of, he wouldn't have anywhere else to sort of turn or to go for a bit of advice and a bit of guidance. And so I did that with him. And now I do a podcast, you know, called High Performance, which is all about taking learnings from other people and passing them on. And I sort of feel like that is probably the answer for me personally. And it won't be for everyone, but I feel like for me, the true, like, having truly arrived is not caring about myself, because I feel so happy and so content and so comfortable. And I also realize, by the way, how lucky I am to have got to this place. But a bit like you, it's been through persistent failure, if that's what you want to call it, or learning, which is probably the right word. It's been through persistent learning that eventually you reach that place.
I completely agree with you. To be in the privileged situation of being in any sort of way successful by whatever standards that is, and then my greater, like, very much like yours, is looking at my, well, through therapy and looking at my younger self, what I would love to teach my younger self and get away all of those conditioning, negative conditioning things, like you can't do what you want to do because of where you're from, or people don't speak like you on the television, and having a small element of that, like in no way in comparison to anybody from a marginalized society, it's just flabbergasting when I look at the media and when I see how many opportunities people have because they got rich parents or whatever, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. It genuinely, to see and to feel, when I go back home, I feel that energy of people thinking that they are not good enough because of their conditioning.
Yeah. And to be able to, horrible, isn't it?
No, it breaks my heart. It genuinely breaks my heart. And that's what it all comes down to, mental health. And it all comes down to the same types of thing, is we are conditioned to think a certain way.
We all need to sort of step up together to solve this. And I think one of the frustrations, I often speak to people and they talk about the bits and pieces that I'm doing. And I say, well, you should do the same thing. And they're like, they often say, well, I will, like when the time's right. But you can't wait until you've got a FTSE 100 business and then go, right, now we're going to have a corporate social responsibility arm. You can't wait until you're earning £1 million a year and then say, right, now I'm ready to give money to charity. You know, you can't wait for the moment to be perfect before you say, right, I'm going to be a difference maker. You know, you have to do it right from the sort of right from the very start. We all have to sort of drive this change together, I think, and we have to support each other. That's what it's all about, lifting each other up.
I do worry that this does fall into this. I don't know what the best way to describe this is that I see constantly on Instagram, get up at 4 a.m, be like The Rock, you can be anybody you want to be, and all that type of stuff. And I agree that works for some people, and I, you know, that's kind of some sort of, you know, energy boost. I can see that, but that type of life isn't for everybody. It's almost just kind of shaking somebody and going, don't listen to your mum and dad, you know, do what's right for you. Follow what you truly want. Be present in what you want. And you're not going to get valued or any sort of way judged if you don't have £1 million in your bank account by the time you're 30. And you don't always have to strive for the same things as everybody else. And I kind of explore it a lot with checking in, with therapy and counseling. You check in with yourself, and you give three words that best describe who you are, how you feel in that moment. And that really helps me, because I drift off, and I can watch one episode of bloody, oh, I can watch Ballers on HBO with The Rock or something. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I want a Lamborghini, and I have to recheck with myself and just kind of get back onto the straight and narrow.
But that's the key, is to check with yourself, though, isn't it? Because I think...
Yeah.
I think it's what we can't do is say, right, let's not all say that the struggle is going to give us the answer. But equally, let's not all say that we just have to look for fulfillment by traveling all the time. And let's not just say you have to have kids to be happy, or let's not say you have to sleep with 1,000 people before you're 21 to be happy. Like, there's loads of different experiences.
That's a good experiment, mine.
It's a good experiment. One I definitely failed, by the way. So there's loads of different ways that you can find happiness. But I think the key thing is for people to find it for themselves. And let's accept that there will be social media accounts that say, get up at 4 a.m, do 1,000 sit-ups, have an hour of meditation, and then attack the day and don't stop and be relentless. And I recently did a podcast interview with Johnny Wilkinson. And he's actually, really interestingly, he said that he thought that the book that he released after winning the World Cup would have created mental health problems among young rugby players in the UK, because all he wrote about was the power of struggle, the power of difficulty, the power of challenging yourself. Whereas now he's realizing that it's not about the struggle. It's about being in the moment. It's about being in the now. It's about being in the flow and enjoying your life. But for some people, it is. For some people, and I think I'm probably one of them, like, I like the struggle. I do. I like the criticism. Mm-hmm. I like that phrase, take the stones they throw at you and build monuments. I like to have that sort of fire coming at me from somewhere. But I realize that for other people is unhealthy. So I think what I would say is just don't get obsessed with everything that you're seeing, and just try and find what really works for you. Like, I know we're all responsible, right, for creating this horrendous, fake, cultivated life on Twitter. Like, we went to a hotel the other day, right, and our kids, for whatever reason, were overexcited, and they were horrendous. And we had this breakfast and stuff got spilt and I got angry, and then Harriet, my wife, was sort of trying to calm me down, and then she was trying to calm the kids down, and then the breakfast was, it was just an awful breakfast, one where you would have looked across the room at us and gone, oh, that family are having a bad start to the day. Then at the end of the meal, I'm like, right, come on guys, let's just get a photo and send it around to the family. So we all then look at the camera and smile like that, and then we've got the family WhatsApp group, and I put the photo in the family WhatsApp group, and straight away my sister comes back and goes, oh, looks amazing, you guys having a great time. And then I actually thought to myself, why did I bother why much better for my sister's mental well-being for me to say, hey Rachel, I know sometimes you have really shite mornings with your kids. We've just had one of them. Rather than, and this is yeah. this is basically repeated, isn't it, on people's social media accounts again and again and again. I mean, the very fact that we edit yeah. photos on our phone before we upload them is everything that's wrong with social media.
Yeah.
Why did I feel the need to do that and say everything's great, guys, rather than just be honest? And it's just like, why are we constantly trying to shout about that perfection? Because then everyone else compares themselves to that perfection.
Yeah, well, it's that word authenticity, isn't it? And yeah. It gets thrown around an awful lot, but it's actually very true. I mean, I definitely dig people when they're a bit more honest and truthful and authentic, etc. Yeah. But I think I'm going to ask you about how you educate your kids, because I've got a stepson who's 13 now in a couple of weeks, and I try and teach him constantly that it doesn't mean anything, you know, that perfect life or that life or this and that, you know, a million things going on, and try and tell him stories like what you just said. And because the best education you can have is to go, take that with a pinch of salt. That person's obviously going to put the best version of themselves out there. Like, you remember those old photo books you'd have on coffee tables and stuff? You're not going to put shit photos in there or shit photos Correct. On the wall. You're going to project. Correct. You're going to all that. But it's just the understanding. And I know subconsciously, I can scroll through Instagram and get wound up or annoyed.
Same here.
And then I'll
let's kick. Listen, Matt, I spend all my time reading books, trying to educate myself, doing podcast interviews like this, and spending time with people where I discuss. Don't compare yourself to other people. Their life is not your life. And I feel I'm really educated, and I feel I'm actually pretty strong in this area, yet still it impacts me.
Yeah.
So imagine if you haven't got that kind of mindset that I've got. How it must be horrendous.
Yeah, awful. Absolutely. That, and I think that's one of the most dangerous things in our children's society at the moment, is that comparison. Always the comparison is the death of joy. That's, you know, one of my favorite quotes. It's definitely highlighted and heightened even more now because of social media.
I'm so worried actually about my kids and 7 and 5.
Yeah. So what do you do to prepare? Yeah, but they're going to be all of a sudden online.
Yeah. The truth is, I have no idea how you prepare them for seeing that sort of stuff. Do you control what they see? Do you just educate them but already, you know, Florence obviously has no media accounts or anything like that because she's only 7, but she still wants to know about numbers of followers and numbers of likes. And I made the point to her. I said, listen, the number of likes you get that doesn't mean anything. I didn't use the word validation. She's only 7. Mm. The number of likes you get, it means nothing, Florence. It counts for nothing. It's like who you truly are is what really matters. So I haven't even really broached the subject of social media. I've basically just sat on my own quietly and sort of panicked about it, really.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think my boy will be all right. My son, I hope anyway, he's really, if you met him, you'd think he's shy, but he's very quiet. But he just takes everything on board. He kind of has a rock solid self-belief. He makes his opinions up about people and he sticks with them and he just deals with stuff. Whereas Florence is much more questioning and wondering and wanting to impress other people and wants to know about other people's opinions. And, you know, a phrase not dissimilar to one that you used a second ago, which I really like as well, which is criticism is the enemy of creativity. And I think that's the sort of thing that our kids are going to have to deal with. Like, I get obviously criticized because I'm on television and talk about sport. People are really emotionally invested in football. So they absolutely come at you really horribly and vitriolic and just so, like, just really dismissive, right? And to the point where I have had situations where I'm on the television and I come from a kids' TV background. I'm not your typical sports presenter by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm thinking, oh, I might do this. And I actually have thought, actually, no, people on Twitter will call me a complete twat for doing that, so I better not do that. And I think afterwards, I think, God, I'm really pissed off with myself for that because I don't want those things to impact me. And I felt like I was pretty insulated against it. And I have taken the approach, I don't know what you're like with this, I've taken the approach that I would rather know what is being written about me on social media because I know for a fact the people I work with, the producers, the execs, the people that run channels and stuff, they definitely read it and look at it. And forewarned is forearmed, right? So I'd rather know what's being said, whether that's right or wrong. I remember one of the producers I once worked with, he used to have TweetDeck, right?
Yeah.
And it was up in front of him. And he would have my name and the name of the program on TweetDeck while we were live. And I remember seeing once a tweet coming in from someone about something I said, and I looked at the tweet and I thought, that's a silly comment. And then about an hour later in the production meeting, that comment was repeated to me as if it was an opinion of the producer.
Oh,
I was just thinking one thing that you could do is this. I'm thinking, hold on. That has literally popped up on your laptop while I've been on the television. And now you've just repeated it to me as if it's your own producing. So you're basically, I'm being produced by some man or woman in a living room somewhere. So
Sean from Sheffield.
Oh, so I then thought, and that was the moment where I thought, I need to know what's being said here, just so I know where this information's coming from. But then that then means you do have to open yourself up to the criticism and you do have to take it on board. And I kind of thought I would dealt with it okay until it started affecting how I worked.
That's insane. So you still look at your tweets and you type in your name and you take a look at it. And So how doesn't that affect you? Because I definitely do not do that.
Yeah. Well, it does affect me. Maybe it's something that I shouldn't do. But then at the same time, I almost feel like I'm a bit worried about not doing it. If you said to me, right, you can never look again at what's being said on social media, I'd be like, I'm not sure I like that idea. But then I also know it's the single biggest source of stress in my life, without doubt. And I think sometimes you can also feel like, you can feel like it's a really big thing when it isn't. But when 20 or 30 people send a message about the same thing, it kind of feels almost like it's real. And I think I have to re-educate myself that just because something is said on social media, it isn't real. But people don't understand what it is like to have that kind of barrage of criticism coming your way.
Well, and it's very new as well. I mean,
I
started in network 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Started in TV 20. But, you know, when I was a journalist at ITV Wales News 10 years ago now, and Twitter just started. And it was all of a sudden, we'd be like, oh, we've got 2 minutes spare on the news. Let's read some tweets out. It's nothing to think about then. And all of a sudden, it is like an algorithm of what people's opinions are. Yeah. Like, we always used to wait to see with, I think it was Eamon Holmes on Points of View or something like that, once every month or something. Like, now it's this constant shaping of your character online. I don't think that's healthy, but it alarms me that it actually matters, because I've just gone, oh, fuck it. If you're cancelled on Twitter, just turn Twitter off. Fuck it. How does it really matter?
Yeah. But it doesn't.
Does.
And that's it? That's your mindset, is it?
Yeah.
I'm jealous of that.
I had a terrible experience once. I needed money and I got $3,000 to do a live wedding from Wales with people on benefits for Channel 5. And it broke me. It absolutely broke me. It was it was one of those shows where I was just left out in the dark, and I wasn't really proud of what I was doing. And I felt really bad for the people that were being filmed, because clearly I think they were having a lovely day, but little did I know that obviously online, when you say these people are using their benefit money to have a wedding, and that whole argument starts about what they should spend their money on, because it's our money or their money. I think I didn't realize that that would open the floodgates to so much criticism. And I did come off air that night dead, because I had to fill for 5 minutes. I had to do basically a best man speech, and it was almost the end of my career. It really broke me. And I was sat in a travelodge in Newport just going through all of the tweets. And they were absolutely horrible. I mean, like, if somebody came up to me in the street and said those things, I'd swing for them. And it was thousands. And from that moment on, I was just like, you know, I'm going to do stuff that people are going to have comments on. I'm going to try and keep it light. I'm not going to engage. And to be honest, I very rarely go onto social media now. If I go on there, it's just to post something funny. And then I look around and I'm like, oh, it's like putting your head inside a tumble dryer. And I'm out.
Yeah.
And I don't bother with it.
How mad, though, that we have to think, like, well, I'm going to put stuff on there, but I'm not going to have an opinion. And it's just going to be really bland. And then no one can... You know, that's the great... And I one of the footballers I work with, Owen Hargreaves, he has a brilliant approach to it. You know, he played for Man United and Bayern Munich and won Champions Leagues and played for England. And I say to him, why are you not on any socials? And he's like, why do I want to be on socials, man? If I want news or updates, I will go and find the news or the updates from the places I want. But I don't want to share my life with anyone. And I certainly don't want people I do not know and whose opinion I do not value telling me what they think of me. If I want to, I mean, I'll tell you a story, actually. I was once, during a football game, was trending on Twitter, right? And it was horrendous. Like, Jake Humphrey, get him off the football, send him back to Kids Telly, send him back to F1. He's just shit. He's smug. He's trying to be friends with the pundits. He doesn't know anything about football. All the usual lazy criticisms that normally come my way from, I have to say, mainly 18-year-old lads that probably would like to be doing the job and aren't, and just assume that I'm lucky to be there. And I got a text message that said, happy new... It was New Year's Eve. And this came in at 4 PM. And it said, hiya, Jake. We've watched BT many times. Tonight we watched the Liverpool game in the roundup. You were so good. I could sense you were getting over a cold, but you were brilliant. We both said, you are the best football presenter on TV. Very enjoyable. And you ask the questions punters want to hear, and you bring out the best in them all. Love, Sue. And I got that message, and I had looked at hundreds of critical tweets about my work, and then got that one message from Sue Barker. And that to me was, right, that is what I need to be listening to. She's walked the walk. She's hosted Sports Personality and Wimbledon and Question of Sport and Olympics. She knows what the job is. Yeah. All these people, you know, what's the phrase? You wouldn't take holiday advice from someone who's never left home. And that's what I was doing. I was looking at messages from people that have never sat in my chair, stood in my shoes, or walked in my footsteps. And it was almost like it mattered what they thought. Yet that one message from someone who I really, and that is a lesson to me now. That is a lesson to me now. I now listen to people like, and I've got much better at seeing that criticism. But what it is, Matt, I know why it happened. I was getting high on my own supply. So I was loving people saying I was great on the telly. I was loving people liking my tweets and my updates, particularly when I was on Formula One, because Twitter first started and Twitter was really friendly then, yeah? It was like a nice place.
Follow Friday, etc., and all that.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah, guys, get it. Oh, I love your work.
Follow these guys. They're awesome.
Yeah. I must be brilliant because everyone says I am. Woohoo. And then that was also like reinforced by BBC Sport at the time. And my producers going, well, look what everyone's saying at home. Look at the tweets that are coming in. Look at the positive comments. You know, they used to say things like, oh, the digital team, as they were called in those days, the digital team say we have 89% positive responses to the programme. So, of course, you're like, woo, let me see them. Let me see them. Don't worry about the 11%. Let me see the 89%. So you'd read all that. Then when it turns and you work in football and you work for a pay TV provider, which among football fans garners sort of natural criticism anyway, and people sort of think that you left the BBC to chase the money. So maybe you're a bit of a sellout as well. Plus, the whole of social media is changing a little bit anyway. And you get a bit more confidence that you start actually sharing opinions on social media. And you go from the BBC, where you're being watched by 7 or 8 million people, to a channel behind a paywall where the audience is less. So you feel you need to shout a bit more and be a bit louder and sort of almost justify your decision. All of those things combined to just bring bile into my life through social media. And it was difficult. It was difficult. But I feel now I'm in a place where I know you can't, but I do feel now I can read them and almost smile. These people are so bothered.
Well, I agree what you're saying, because I, again, when you meet somebody, like I bumped into Gazzo once at This Morning, and he went, "Hey, is you off the telly? You're good, you are. Lock it up, brilliant. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's amazing. I'll have that for a long time." And I do value opinions from peers. I always feel that an audience will vote with their feet anyway. So whatever they say is great. Everybody's got an opinion. And like you say, somebody that's emotionally invested in something, they're going to shout more and they have the opportunity more. And with the more TV broadcasters given that as a platform, it's going to happen. But I always feel like, well, you know, they just won't buy the record if they don't like me. And that's fine. But, and as well, well, Eamon Holmes says I'm good. That's great. But whatever, Bruce Forsyth. But the real thing, and I really, this is my big thing for everybody, just if you think you've done a good job, that's enough. Like, if you give yourself an honest opinion, the way that you talk to yourself, and I mean, I've been the worst victim of this 10 years ago when I tried to take my own life. I was the worst person I could ever imagine to myself. All those people on Twitter did not come close to how I spoke to myself. And that's the, like you say, the answer and whatever, and like there's many different things, many different facets to having a solid mind or a
but it's not easy life. I think that is the key thing. I, from my perspective anyway, like, I am jealous of people who own self-talk, and you obviously are really good at it, and I'm really,
it's a process, pleased. It's not easy.
Exactly I was gonna say, I'm sort of pleased and I'm proud of you that you've taken the steps to do that, and it's like always going to be hard work probably, and you're always going to have to make use of the skills that you're learning, but you're doing it, and that's the key thing. It isn't easy though, is it? And I feel like I am
none of it is.
I just need to work a lot harder at reminding myself that things are good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, I think, from having these conversations, like when you earlier said being present, I know when I'm working, when you're working, I think that you have to be present, because there's so many things, moving parts, there's so many things happening. You have no choice but to be present. And that can be quite addictive, can't it? That kind of...
Yeah, it can. And I think that presence. You know what, Matt, when I really sort of... By the way, it's so nice, isn't it, just to chat like this?
Yeah.
It's sort of... It's not the conversation that typically men have enough of. But when I sort of... when I really sit here and break it down... Like, maybe part of the issue for me is that I just feel so responsible. You know, I did buy a big house in the country. Well, that's my responsibility to make sure I can afford the mortgage on it, right? And I have put my kids in a nice school, and that is my responsibility. And they have got used to nice holidays. And I feel that there's a lot on my shoulders. And maybe my issues that I still have with social media is I just don't want social media to sort of bring it all crumbling down by one mistake on Twitter or one silly comment, or do you know what I mean? It feels like we live in a world now where there is no leeway to go, oh yeah, well, maybe they're learning, or maybe they were having a bad day, or maybe they weren't feeling well. We just get rid of them.
I completely agree.
And we cancel them. And that cancel culture is scary, because you don't want to be on the wrong end of it. And you know, you and I both would have known Caroline Flack, for example, someone who did experience that, and you see the effects that it has on people. And I think that is a kind of, it lurks around all the time, that at the moment, if you're in the public eye, no matter how big or small your role is in the public eye, people can come for you.
And I think that's very point. I think the situation with Flacky, a good friend of mine, and what happened there should have been a real eye-opener and a massive
not there,
magnifying.
Is it?
Not at all, mate. It's not.
Be kind lasted a couple of days. In
literally a couple of days.
We can cross global pandemic off the list of things that might bring us together on social media.
I mean, we've
reached that point now.
Talking about this earlier with my friend, I was like, do you remember when I said on Instagram that I think this is going to be really good for us all? It's going to bring us all together. Literally 4 minutes later. People are like, you fucking mask wearing idiots, all this stuff. And do you know what I mean? And that's why I just see it as noise. And I think maybe the Caroline situation affected me. My friend Sophie Graydon took her own life 2 years ago. She was on Love Island, and the barrage of hate and et cetera that she received, and that life that she was supposed to live because of the expectations she put on herself was just so incredibly tough. And I suppose this is what we're talking about. This is a very new situation, which is scary, which is
and I think we're all learning as we go along, by the way. You know, I now absolutely consciously, and if people trawled through my tweets, they might find some from a couple of years ago, because I didn't see the light then. I do not post negative, critical, aggressive, bullying, dismissive stuff. Like, people probably get bored and unfollow me because all I'm doing is putting up like positive quotes and positive messages, and, you know, sharing clips on the podcast that I do about how to enrich your life, how to feel better within your own skin, how to be empowered, how to be happy. Because what is the point adding to the negative stuff? Like, I had a chat with my brother the other day, and my brother is quite anti sort of big government and big corporations and all that sort of stuff. And he said, and we were basically discussing, how can we make an impact on the world at the moment? And we kind of agreed, if we just said, right, my inner circle, my core group, and we'll all have them, you know, we're talking about close family, friends, probably 20, 25 people each, right? Those you hold dear. I am going to absolutely invest in them. I'm going to speak to them regularly. I'm going to make sure they feel good. I'm going to make it absolutely clear if they've got a problem, I'm there for them. And the agreement is they do the same with their close friends. And we start this movement. And before you know it, that would be everyone in the world, because they're literally, wouldn't have to go that far. I mean, you know, you think about it. Let's say it goes from you to someone at ITV, from someone at ITV to Piers Morgan, from Piers Morgan to Donald Trump, right? That's how quickly you could start to influence the power of America.
Kindness.
Do you know? And just say, right, let's just all be thoroughly kind, thoroughly positive. Let's just uplift and celebrate the people around us for a week. And see what happens.
The world
would be a different place. The world would be a different place. It's so fucking simple and so easy to do.
It's free.
Like, just be good to each other, man. We're not here for that long.
No, we're really not. And I think that's the thing, what happens with during the pandemic, we have lots of realizations, is that quick fret to get back to normal. But the main crux of what we're talking about there with kindness, compassion, the opposite of that, like, your friends and family and your social group within, like, my urban family, like I have now in London, and from Caerphilly, I've got my mates there and all that. I've got my core tribe and all that type of stuff. And going back to, and interestingly, like a harsh lesson to learn from having people you love die because of comments from people, and taking the power away from those comments and being compassionate. Because if somebody can see a video, see you on the television, and have the time to construct a tweet to say something mean to bring you down, that person's in a bad place themselves. That person is struggling in some sort of way, and having the compassion and feeling sorry for him in some sort of way is also another way to kind of get around any sort of negative abuse. And obviously, this is you on TV.
That. Yeah, Matt, it extends to replying to the negativity and saying, listen,
you don't sound great.
I don't know why you felt the need to spend some of your time writing that. But if you're not happy at the moment, there's loads of people you can talk to.
Yeah.
I've done it
myself. I've been in situations where I've got pissed in an afternoon and I'm not in a good place. I've gone onto Twitter and I've had an argument about politics with somebody. I've even commented underneath people's posts and had a little fight with somebody. And it's my own fault. And I go, my God, I've done exactly what I hate. And it's because, you know, I was in a bad place myself. And it's just that compassion. And that's what, you know, like kindness and compassion. That's the way, isn't it? Presence, kindness and compassion.
And this, for anyone that's listening to us talking and they're thinking, yeah, I'm getting, and obviously we're not talking necessarily just about social media criticism, but any criticism, any bullying, any negativity in your life, please understand it is all about them and nothing to do with you. This is them putting their opinion onto you. And that's why, you know, you literally cannot worry about opinions, because an opinion is not who you are. An opinion is what someone is trying to force upon you. You know what you are. You know who you are. That's what matters. That is absolutely what matters. Your reputation does not matter. Your actions are what.
Unless you get a tweet from Sue Barker.
It was a text, so obviously we're close. So. Not sure she's on Twitter. I'd love it if she was.
Wait, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. I could actually talk to you all day about this because it's very important stuff, and I hope anybody listening out there can kind of understand the power of conversation, because I feel present. I feel like I'm having a true connection with somebody, which is most of the time all I need. And thank you so much for your time, Jake.
No, listen, mate, it's an absolute pleasure to sit in. And can I just say, what you're doing is really important. And I, you know, I don't want people to listen to this and think that a couple of guys that have had average to good broadcasting careers, should we call them those? Just two guys that sit and have had those careers have any right to preach to other people about how they should live or how they should think. It's not about that. It's about the power of just sharing. And wouldn't it be great if people picked up the phone and had a similar conversation with their mates about how are you feeling?
Yeah.
And just try to spread a bit of positivity, because, like I always say, nothing bad can come from doing something good. So give it a whirl.
Change the face of men's health. For more information or to support Movember, head to movember.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.